and welcome to the maiden voyage of Extreme Jeans. It's Family History Radio. I am Fisher, so excited to be doing this show. And you might be wondering, what? Fisher's doing talk? I've been listening to him do morning radio forever. Well, the reality of the matter is I've also been doing family history research for about as long as I've been doing morning radio. And, you know, the thing is, your job's over at 11 in the morning, and the kids aren't home from school till about 3 o'clock. And so I had the opportunity to do something every day throughout the midday. And in my case, I'd go down to the family history library and hang out with the octogenarians. I was, you know, 25, 29. It was one of those things you didn't share with a lot of people at that point. You know, going through old microfilms and smelly old musty books and, you know, talking about dead people. You know, a lot of my friends, they were still dating, you know, trying out hot cars. And so this is something you just kind of kept to yourself. But things are different now. We have DNA, we have digitized newspaper, Ancestry.com, FamilySearch.org, all these things that are there to help us research our families and learn so much about who came before us and why we became the way we did. And so on this show each week, we're going to share a lot of the latest news, a lot of stories you might not have heard about, and maybe some that you have. Love this story. I'm going to give you my first gift, your first ancestor that you may not have even known that you had. His name is Charlemagne. You know that he was an emperor, and he was considered the founder of Europe, born in the 700s. I guess the strange thing about him is thinking about an emperor born to a king named Pepin the Short. Who would name their child Pepin the Short? All right, so here's a story. It was written by a man named Carl Zimmer, who referenced the work of a guy named Joseph Chang back in 1999. And Chang did a little math, and he was figuring this out, that if we each have four grandparents and eight great-grandparents and 16 second greats and all that, you get back to the time of Charlemagne, and you would have 1 trillion ancestors. Well, there were not a trillion people in the world at that time. So as a result, they figured, wait a minute, then our family tree then has to collapse back in on itself at some point. And that means basically we all descend from the same people. And the conclusion of this article is really amazing. It says that people who lived in England about 1000, about the year 1000, are all ancestors of everybody living in Europe today. And so anybody of European descent has that common ancestry. And that, of course, would include Charlemagne. Yes, we are all descendants of Charlemagne. I've actually traced him. I have one link back anyway, and I'm sure we all have many because you'd have to. Otherwise, you'd have the trillion ancestors. But he's my 40th great-grandfather, and I would imagine it would be about the same for you. So we're all royal cousins of great descent. England seems to have a lot of fascinating stories, especially this year. This was the year they finally they put the flesh on the bones of the king who was under the parking lot. You heard about that back in the spring. They actually found him last year. King Richard III, Shakespeare kind of skewered him in his assessment of his performance as king. He had a problem with his back, a hunchback kind of thing, and he was killed in battle in his 30s. And they found him under a parking stall. Could you imagine having to park there on a regular basis and sometime later realizing that you were parking over a king all this time? It's just the most bizarre story that you would ever hear. So ultimately, they were able to get some DNA from this corpse and match it up, strangely enough, with a lady in Canada who was a descendant of King Richard's sister. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. Unbelievable. So now the strangest thing about it all is that the descendants of King Richard III are now all angry about where he's ultimately going to be buried. They're gathering together, and it's like, I really don't understand how they still have that emotional connection to this guy who lived, almost 600 years ago now. So that's an amazing story. Tie that in with what happened in British Columbia. They had recently found a 5,500-year-old Aboriginal woman on a British Columbian island. And they were somehow able to extract some DNA from her. And then they went around looking for folks who had lived on that island for many, many generations, back basically to the dawn of time. And there were actually several people there that said, yeah, I don't know that there was ever a time when our people didn't live on this island. They said, okay, would you mind if we borrowed some DNA from you? And they found several people who descended directly from this 5,500-year-old ancestor who they dug up. And they'd found more female bones of another one 2,500 years old. So we're talking about 500 years before Christ. I mean, we're talking unbelievable numbers here. So there's a lot of excitement going on in British Columbia. Many people are having astonishing breakthroughs right now as a result of DNA research. Now, this one in British Columbia had everything to do with mitochondria research, where they go back female to female, the mother to the mother to the mother line. Similarly, there's the Y chromosome, of course, you're probably familiar with. It goes back down the male line and is often the name line, unless there was some break in that at some point. So you can tie in a lot. So a lot of people are doing this today. I've, in fact, had an amazing experience with my son-in-law. His story isn't quite complete yet, but an amazing tale where he ties in through the birth family of his grandfather, who his grandfather never knew. So they're all coming together, and we're going to have that story for you in the coming weeks, because there's going to be a reunion of these two families who have never met. So that's going to be a lot of fun. DNA, this is the big new area in family history research, and I'm hoping in the next 3 or 4 weeks we're going to have some guests in and talk about where this is all going. What's the privacy issue involved when you share your DNA with these different labs that are helping you tie together with various families, not only here in the country, but around the world? Exciting stuff happening there. Digitized newspapers, another great source of information. In fact, when we have Sue Richards coming up here in a few minutes, she's from the Fort Douglas Museum and Cemetery. She's going to be talking about an amazing breakthrough she had with newspapers, finding somebody buried there whose burial record did not exist. It ended a search of somewhere over 12 years. A newspaper man, a descendant of this man's brother, wanting to know all about where he was, and they couldn't find him. But after a dozen years, it all came through, because things are changing fast and everybody can do this. So I'm hoping you'll be with us every week as we continue to explore what's going on. You can share your stories. You can call in. You can ask your questions. We'll have experts on a regular basis and look forward to helping you with that. And talk to Tom Perry. He's our title sponsor with the Multimedia Center. This is the guy who I first met when I brought in my home movies from back in the 50s and 60s, some as late as early as the 40s, I should say. And he was able to take those and digitize these films. Unbelievable stuff. So movies I couldn't watch anymore, I now have on DVD, and was able to watch and actually extract still photographs. We'll talk about that coming up in the fourth segment of the show. So we got a lot ahead, not only today, but in the weeks to come. So glad to have you along. Be right back with Sue Richards from the Fort Douglas Museum and Cemetery on Extreme Genes. Welcome back to Extreme Genes Family History Radio. I am Fisher, and first guest here, Sue Richards today from the Fort Douglas Museum. And Sue, I'm so excited to have you here, because there's so many things to talk about that go on, not only in cemeteries and museums, but in terms of military history that people can research. And you've been doing this for a long time.
For a long time.
Yeah. Now tell us what kind of records are available at Fort Douglas. And, of course, in cemeteries in general, what can people find there?
Well, at the Fort Douglas Military Museum, we archive the records for the Fort Douglas Post Cemetery, a cemetery that opened in December of 1862.
Wow.
With the first burial being somebody's wife who still remains anonymous.
They don't know who she is.
We do not know who the first burial was, although it was recorded as the end of December 1862.
And some female. That's
yes.
All you know. It's just a
yes.
Female, and it was a wife of an officer. It must have been an officer.
Was probably not necessarily an officer. Some of the enlisted men had their wives with them, and in the Army at that time, there were a number of laundresses who were civilians who were paid by the military to go with the troops to do their laundry.
Wow. Well, you know, the thing about Extreme Genes that I like is putting the meat on the bones, not just getting dates and places and all that. I mean, that's obviously mm-hmm. essential to knowing who your people are, but it's the stories and it's the actual effort to find them that makes it so much fun. Now, Fort Douglas kind of combines the military records, cemetery records, obviously Utah history, and I would imagine you have a good helping of all of that where you are.
Well, not only the cemetery records, the military records, Utah history, national history, and international history, because the Fort Douglas Military Museum is the Utah Military Museum to tell the story of Utahns in the military and the military in Utah, including everyone who deploys from here or comes back from here to places far and beyond.
Okay, so you opened up, at least the cemetery did, in 1862.
Fort Douglas, originally Camp Douglas, Stephen A. Douglas, named after
him, yeah.
Named after him.
After Lincoln's opponent.
After
right.
Lincoln's opponent is yep. a Civil War post.
Okay.
October 1862 to protect the telegraph, the travelers, and all of the communications from the East Coast to the West Coast and the West Coast to the East Coast for the Union.
But there were not a lot of Utahns, obviously, involved.
There were
no Utahns involved. Okay. So they're all out-of-staters up to what point? Because there are Utahns there now.
The initial post was opened by a troop of California volunteers called up by Lincoln to fight the Civil War. And instead of going to Virginia, they came to the territory of Utah and found themselves on the East Bench overlooking the city of the Great Salt Lake. They were not pleased. They did not like the Mormons. The Mormons
did not like them,
military. But it was a wonderful combination because there was no cash economy here. And the military brought that. And the economy here could support a fairly large military post. And it became a permanent post that remained a permanent post until 1991.
Wow. 91.
Yes.
I don't even remember when it shut down.
It shut down piece by piece with the university using the property, starting with the president's circle in 1882.
Wow, way back then.
So
when did the Utahns get into the cemetery here?
The Utahns that are in the cemetery here are ones who joined the military at about the time of the Spanish-American War. They would have been Utah National Guard.
About 1898.
92 was when the National Guard was officially commissioned by Congress.
Okay.
And in the Spanish-American War, they were mobilized, sent off to the Philippines.
Yeah.
And that's about the time we started burying Utahns, other than non-Mormon Utahns who did not want to be buried in a Mormon cemetery prior to that.
Wow.
And there are a group of those up there also.
Okay. So do you get a lot of Utahns now who come up looking for their dead at your cemetery?
Yeah. I average two or three requests a week for either information on someone buried in the cemetery, my relative is there, what can you tell me? Or is my relative there, can you help me find them?
And this is kind of common, basically, for any cemetery.
This is common for any cemetery.
And a lot of people really wonder, how do you operate there? What records do cemeteries as a whole have?
Cemeteries as a whole have a record of every burial.
Right.
There are times when the records are incomplete due to fires, floods, and so on. Especially
theft. Yeah, mice in the records.
Oh. Yes, of course. Yeah. As with any other official record,
sure, anything that's written.
But we have in the folder for a person buried in the cemetery, we try to have a partial military record that shows why they can be buried there. If we can complete that folder, we may have a death certificate. We may have an obituary. We may have a newspaper article about something that they did somewhere. As we find things at the Fort Douglas Cemetery records, we're working to fill these folders out so that these are people, not headstones, right. We're working with.
Right, because a headstone is pretty fundamental.
Yeah, so if a family comes in and says, my father, Sergeant Jones, is buried in your cemetery, the first thing I say is, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
He's in one of the nicest cemeteries in the valley. Then I say, what do you know about him? And they say, we don't know anything. Why was he in the military? And that's where my job begins.
Now, you've been researching a lot of the, I would assume, the earliest ones first.
Not necessarily.
Really?
No.
Jump around through time?
We jump around through time as we get requests.
Okay.
And then we work on ones that we don't have requests on. We've got about 1,300 burials in the cemetery.
Okay.
Officially, the cemetery was closed in 1989 when the post was scheduled for decommission in 1991. We still are burying people there, friends of friends, who have reservations from previous times.
Yeah, they own or they, do they own a slot in a military? Can you own a grave?
You have a reservation for a grave. A military grave is not one that you pay for.
Okay.
You get it by virtue of having been in the military or being related to someone who is in the military.
Sure.
Or working for what is now known as the Department of Defense and being allowed military honors for burial.
I had no idea you could have a reservation for a cemetery. That's that is amazing.
Yeah, you don't own the plot.
So let's fast forward now several years, and you're good friends with a friend of mine, Robert Kirby.
That's correct.
Who's a great writer in town, has been for decades on end, but he's also an impassioned historian, and that's what I love about Robert.
Yes.
And he had a problem.
He had a problem. He's a member of the Peace Officers Association, and they try to memorialize every fallen peace officer in the state.
Right.
Back in...
It's a great thing to
do. Yeah, great thing, wonderful project. We need to memorialize our peace officers. We need to show that respect. He had been looking for 10 years for a peace officer for whom he could not find any information other than who the man was, the fact that he had died as warden of the territorial prison in 1876, and was buried somewhere.
Wow. Now, why did he die in 76?
There was a prison break.
Oh, boy.
And he was killed in the prison break by one of the prisoners who filled a sock full of rocks and beat him to death. It was a very ugly situation, very well described in the newspapers of the time. And then they went on to describe chasing the prisoners who had broken out, and that was the end of finding Matthew Berger.
That was the end of the story until Robert came along and
took
an interest
in this. That was the end of the story until Robert came along. He actually has him in his book, but he did not have a burial place, and he had been looking for one for 10 years.
And so he came to you at the museum.
He came to me at the museum. Actually, we were talking casually one day about something else. Among other things, Robert's father was military, and Robert's first job was catching rats in the post exchange at Fort Douglas.
Oh.
His very first paid job, and
you got to start somewhere.
You got to start somewhere, and for Curbs, that seems to be an appropriate job. But anyhow, he came to me, and I said, "Oh, no problem, no problem at all. I'll find him. I've got access to all these records." He says, "I've looked in those records." I says, "If you looked in the military records over in Colorado, because at that time that's where our records were archived." He said, "No, I haven't done that."
And off you went. And we're going to hold it right here. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back because you did find this after all those years. And we want to hear the story about how you went about solving that mystery.
The rest of the story.
Yes. Coming up on Extreme Genes next. We are back. Extreme Genes, Family History Radio. It is Fisher here back with Sue Richards from the Fort Douglas Museum. And we've been talking about Robert Kirby, the famous writer here in Utah who was going about solving the, I wouldn't call it the mysteries, but basically collecting information on the fallen peace officers of our state, and was having trouble with one particular gentleman who ran the territorial prison and was killed in a prison break in 1877. Wow.
1876, sir.
76. So the question is, he comes to you after how many years had he been looking?
He had been looking for over 9 years, almost 10 years.
And you said, "Give me that problem. We'll solve it." But there was no record. There was no burial record, even among your records.
Even amongst the military records.
So what did you do?
Well, I went back to the dusty, musty archives.
Yeah.
I could find the newspaper accounts of the prison break. I could find coroner's records. Not his, I went through burial and disinterment records at different Salt Lake Valley cemeteries. Nothing. I went through the records again at Fort Carson, Colorado. Nothing. I went to the National Archives to the day records to find out if soldiers had dug a grave for Matthew Berger. No records.
Sue, just in the short time I've gotten to know you, I can tell that does not throw you off at all.
Oh, no. I mean, no. Once one of these ghosts sits on my shoulder, Matthew Berger became the ghost in the attic and the monster under the bed.
Oh, really?
And yeah, I would be doing other things, and all of a sudden his name would come up again in a newspaper article, or I'd pick something up off the floor that fell off the desk, and there it was.
There was his name again.
He's going, find me.
This happens all the time.
And I finally had reached the point where I was going to say, sorry, Matthew, rest in peace. And a very elderly relative of his in Virginia telephoned me to ask if I knew where Matthew was buried. She had been to Salt Lake as a young woman and was told that her uncle was here, but she hadn't ever had a chance to see if she could find his grave. And she was now in her 80s and wanted to know if there really was a grave for Matthew Berger.
So here. this is just after Robert had come to you. You had gone through all this effort.
I had spent another 18 months working on it.
And then she comes up out
of
the blue.
And then she comes, I mean, a cold call from Virginia to the museum.
Isn't that strange how those things happen?
So I started over again.
Wow.
I went through the Masonic records. He definitely wasn't a Mason.
He was not a Mason. Well, why did you go through the Masonic records?
Because when he initially died, they thought he was a Mason because so many military officers had been Masons.
Oh, I see. Okay,
so so they gave his body to the Masons. The Masons looked in their records, and they gave the body back to the coroner. They refused to keep him.
And you found that information where?
In the Salt Lake Tribune.
Okay.
March of 1876.
So it was mostly newspaper records that helped you start to
yes.
crack this.
Uh-huh. So I decided, okay, if there was that much information, I would go back, and I spent 2 days reading microfilm from the time of his death until the end of the month, going through all of the little articles in the Tribune and in the Deseret News of March of 1876.
Wow. Were your eyes bleeding?
They always do.
Yeah.
You get sick to your stomach.
Yes, I do.
This is
that too.
One of the hazards of being a genealogist
researcher.
Or a researcher.
Yes.
And then, in the middle of a column of advertising, I found the following. Notice of interment. The Daily Salt Lake Tribune, March 21st, 1876. Burial of Captain Berger.
Oh, that must have given you a little tingle.
Hey, I was jumping up and down and yelling. And Doug down at State History was coming in to see if I was okay, you know, and
yes.
I found him. I finally found Matthew Berger. And that particular article in the middle of a page of ads gave the entire ceremony of his burial at the Fort Douglas Post Cemetery.
Okay.
Okay, fast forward to Kirby again. And in May 2007... we placed a memorial stone in the post cemetery after 18 months of trying to cut red tape to get a memorial stone put in through graves registration of the Army.
Wow. Now help me understand, though. Were you able to find exactly what grave he was in?
No.
Okay.
But there is an area for unknowns in the post cemetery.
Okay.
And a lot of these unknowns were buried at about the time that Berger died. So we marked off an area of about 6 or 7 graves marked unknown. There was a space in between 2 of these unknown gravestones where there was nothing. And that's where we placed the memorial stone. So he is somewhere within about 5 graves.
Either way.
Of where the memorial stone is.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had a ceremony for him.
We had a ceremony for him that involved the Fallen Peace Officers Association, the Civil War reenactors who dedicated the grave and put a flag and a wreath on it because he had served the Union.
Okay.
And the flag, when it was folded, was given to the warden of the state prison and his contemporary officers who are there now.
Wow.
It was an amazing event.
Is that like one of the highlights of your career?
It is one of them, yes.
Okay.
It's one of the, I mean, this is fun.
Yeah.
I love my cemetery. It is.
Sure.
It is my quiet place. Well, it is my happy place at the post.
Tell me about the niece who called, though. Now, is she still with us, or was she to that point?
She was still with us to that point. She was not able to come. We taped it. We sent her a copy of the tape.
Unbelievable.
By then, she had moved to Texas, and she since has passed away. Because, as I say, she was nearly 90 when she contacted me. And that was back in 2005.
Wow.
So, anyway, but this is one of the...
This is what you do there.
This is what I do.
And you know, in my
this is what I do for fun.
Yeah, me too.
I talk to dead people for fun.
Yes. You know, I've been to many cemeteries over the years, and some folks are just, you know, hey, let's dig in. They're right there like you are. And then there are others like, do not step around to the side of my desk. I'm here alone. I'm very uncomfortable with a stranger in the building. But, you know, everybody's different, so you have to kind of, you know, get a feel for how they work. Some people want an appointment. Some people just, you know, walk right in and we'll get you going. And then some cemeteries, thank goodness, now have a lot of material that's online from all over the world that you can just go on there. And, of course, there's Find a Grave, too, which is wonderful.
And our cemetery is on Find a Grave, and it's reasonably complete. I have a Find a Grave volunteer who also separately volunteers for me at the cemetery. And she's the one that's helping me find the records to flesh out our friends who are buried there.
Now, you have photos then of the graves, obviously.
Yes.
And many Find a Grave pieces with the, you know, the information mm-hmm. on them will give the biographical material.
Yes, they will give an obituary if one is available.
Right. And so you post those as well as you, or do you write them then as you go along?
As we go along, as I find material, I send it to Find a Grave. And if they deem it that it's appropriate, they add it to their posting online.
What's not appropriate? What would not be? Are they just concerned more about that something might not be genuine or
yes.
something along those
yeah.
lines?
It's a case of being sure that it's accurate. And if that we find something on a cemetery headstone notice on our on the internet that is not accurate, we notify Find a Grave and they take it off.
Really? Now, does that happen very often? What have you found? I've never heard of that.
There have been a couple of times where families have posted something that was a family legend.
Yes, or an exaggeration.
An exaggeration.
Perhaps. Yeah.
Or perhaps a wrong death date, because sometimes in family records,
sure.
things are not as accurate as they might be.
Yeah, I've got a family Bible from the 1800s where great-great-grandpa died on December 26th. The official record says the 27th at 12:30 in the morning. Which is most accurate? Well,
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter, but you have to go with the official one.
You go with the official one.
Yep.
But, you know, it's just exciting when people want to know about their family and their friends, and I can help. And all it takes is a phone call, or you're welcome to walk into my office at the Fort Douglas Military Museum. And if I'm really, really busy, I will give you my business card and say, please come back tomorrow at such and such a time. I do make appointments because I try to work with the family while they're in my office.
Right.
If it's over the phone, I say, give me all the information you have. I make notes. I will get back with you within a week if I can help you.
And you'll
love it. Or if I can't. And I love it.
Yeah.
I love every bit of it. Working with this cemetery is my very favorite video game.
See, what I like about Sue is she's like some of the best people I've ever run into on the trail, because there's never enough they can do for you. And there are people like you out there all over the place, and thank goodness for it.
That's correct.
They give you all kinds of great ideas, by the way, about searching not only military records there, but military records anywhere, including the National Archives and Records Administration, NARA, how to research Utah military records, militia, things along those lines. So if you want to... Sue, thank you so much for taking the time to come up today. This has been fascinating, a lot of fun, and you're getting me excited about getting back to cemeteries.
Well, thank you for featuring the Fort Douglas Military Museum and the Post Cemetery, and come on up and I'll find your grandfather.
I'd be surprised, because I know where they all are, but somebody's we will. Extreme Jeans, Family History Radio on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.